UK, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, a minute past the hour on this, the 16th day of June 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump in on the multimedia madcap zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Well, you know, assuming that, you know, you don't have a Mac and the Java, the thing with the... But anyway, there... HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom and pick yourself out a screen. If you've never been there before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. You'll be right in the thick of things. Right there alongside Anatole and Jug of Punch and Jules and Steve from Georgia Stan, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chatroom moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has again folded space this lovely afternoon to become Man Cave. Yes. Yes, indeed. So, you know, we're all set. More folks will be wandering in for this here, tight thorn in the side Thursday. Yeah. Coming through loud and clear on my abacus via TuneIn, Brother Bob Brother Deacon Asa. Yes, indeed. Hey, we're broadcasting by abacus. Hey, look, I'm dancing. Yeah. I need to figure out, I got to get with John Fox real soon. I need to figure out a way to do, to use like the wireless mics so I can just wander around outside on a beautiful day like this, maybe a cold beer in hand, because it's freaking gorgeous outside. Oh, it's warm, and those big puffy cotton ball clouds are up there, and the sun is bearable for somebody like me who, you know, is so white that he burns under a refrigerator bulb. Me! Hi! I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes. No, Anatole, this is not Scotch weather. No. No, I might be cajoled into, say, a gin and tonic on a day like this. That would be nice. That would be nice. I'm being told that it's hot as hell in the North Georgia mountains, according to Steve from Georgia Stan. He and Karen have begun working on year number 21 of their marriage as of today. That's just a happy thing. But it would be kind of cool to be able to do that. And equally cool to maybe, you know, set up a webcam. Yep. But, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, it is in fact Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn, and The Horn is in fact a listener supported broadcast operation, which relies upon you. There are thousands of you, A very small percentage of those thousands participate in keeping the program actually on the air, and that's how we've managed to do it for these many years. So if you would like to participate in helping keep The Horn on the air, just run over to headonradionetwork.com. There's a tab there called Contribute. There are some fields that you fill out. It's a PayPal interface. You put in your name and how much you want. And you know what? If you would like, if you want to put in $10 and click the little box that says make this a recurring subscription, that is awesome. You know, we still have the ambition someday of getting to $410 a month subscribers. Now, granted, we haven't gotten to $110 a month subscribers, but, well, we remain optimistic, the Horn Family Community Congregation. Yeah, that's true. Steve from Georgia stands. Mint julep would work. This is mint julep weather, but daggummit, my silver cups are somewhere, sterling silver cups are in a box somewhere. I don't think we ever unpacked them. Daggummit. Just fill out the fields on the contribute page. You know, you can leave blank what you do for Mr. Spacely over at Spacely Space Sprockets and how much he pays you and all of that stuff. Just get to the next screen. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, well, you know, I wonder how many people just kind of fast forward past this on the podcast. I bet a bunch do. But if you would prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, that address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. Checks and money orders only, please. Not only, but that's what we advise, because remember, we share a mailbox at a UPS store that also rents a mailbox to the Klan, and they're a bunch of low-down, lower-than-a-snake's-belly-in-a-wagon, rut-thieving sons of bitches. So we feel better when it's checks and money orders. Okay? Yeah, okay. But at any rate, your kind gift is what helps keep all of this going, because, hey, Tim, the fact that you were here late is not my fault. I already did it. Oh, I love it in the chat room, because he said, your name, Bob Kincaid? And Anatole in the chat room's already on it. Oh, he already did it, Tim. Oh, I win! Wait, where's the... that, yes.
I rule.
Exactly. So anyway, that's how the whole keep the thing on the air works, because, you know, we don't have any ads. And, by the way, I'm advised that whereas it's hotter than hell in the North Georgia mountains, according to Steve from Georgia Stan, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, let me know that Kansas City is hot. Yes, it is. Real hot. It gets that way. That's the funny thing. It seems like there's no middle ground. I mean, it's colder than hell out there in the winter, and blazing freaking hot in the summer, which we're approaching. We are, what, 6 days, 7 days, a week away or so from the first day of summer? Yeah. But you didn't come here to talk about the weather, did you? No, of course, no. No, not at all. It's going to be hard to get away from, I mean, we're four days past the Orlando massacre, and it's going to be difficult to get away from that topic, but I think there's other stuff out there that is equally worthy of your attention and our attention. Earlier today, and it's not like this is happy news, it's more like the American disease spreading. You know, it's kind of hard to get your hands on a pistol in Great Britain, but I guess there are a few around and about. But the American disease, the American gun disease, metastasized into the UK today. And no, it was not a Muslim. According to everything I can read, Labour Party Member of Parliament Joe Cox was a lovely woman of good... Notice the verb tense there. Yeah, you know what's coming. Was a good and decent human being. She had worked on... she'd been an aid worker before she became a Member of Parliament. She lived part-time on a boat in the Thames. And as a member of the Labour Party in the UK, she was, because you know there's a referendum coming up on whether or not the UK will remain part of the European Union or whether they will partake of what is being called a Brexit. First, there was a Grexit, the threat of a Grexit. Now there's a Brexit, meaning that there's a contingent of right wingers in the UK who want to insulate themselves. And, you know, insulate comes from the same word that, well, the Latin word for island is insula, I-N-S-U-L-A, the Latin word for island. And insulate means to make an island of oneself in its original sense. And, of course, Britain is an island. And they would, and the right wing in Great Britain would very much like to reinforce the status of Great Britain as an island and back out of any participation in the European Union. Well, Labour Party MP Joe Cox opposed the exit from the EU, and she paid for that with her life earlier today. A man by the name of Tommy Mayer, M-A-I-R, aged 52, screaming, "Britain first!" attacked Labour MP Joe Cox, shooting her and stabbing her repeatedly. She was airlifted to a trauma center in Leeds, where 4 hours later she was declared dead. She leaves behind a husband and two children, aged 3 and 5. Not a lot of instances in the modern world where the left, the so-called left, runs around executing, assassinating, and otherwise murdering people. But whether it's a homophobe in the United States slaughtering 49 people and wounding 53 others, or an ultra-right-wing proto-fascist in the UK knocking off a 41-year-old member of parliament, that seems to be preferred mode for the right wing. Now, of course, the Britain First Party, and of course Tommy Mayer, the assassin, that's what he yelled, "Britain First!" have run screaming away from the murder. Well, you know, from what I understand, it could have been like a slogan that he was screaming, "Britain first," you know, "put Britain first." We certainly don't approve of assassinations, you know, if anybody's watching. There is an ugly fascist movement running through, and we've talked about that from time to time. Our buddy the Angry Indian is particularly well-versed on it. Our friend Chris in Germany sees it up hand from time to time. Because remember, in Cologne, Germany, Frau Recke, who was running for mayor, was repeatedly stabbed by, well, in that case, you know, a Muslim man. But there's nasty violence. There's a nasty violent streak that is running through this world. Note coming in from Brother Usher Steve. Subject line, impossible. Joe Cox couldn't, he writes, Joe Cox couldn't have been airlifted, Bob. They got the socialized medicine over there. Everybody knows that nobody can get health care there. Well, I mean, she died. So I'm sure that's going to be an argument, too. But I hate, it's just, damn. Oh, by the way, did I mention that the Britain First Party, and that's what Tommy Marriott, Britain First! Did I mention that the Britain First Party endorses Donald Trump, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, and his wall-building, Muslim-excluding, Muslim-rounding-up policies? Yeah. And with apologies to Gertrude Stein, a fascist is a fascist is a fascist is a fascist. All right. So it seems like, you know, and you know, this was just in a small town in the UK outside a library. And ours is our disease spreads. So, for what they are worth, condolences to Ms. Cox's friends and family. Thank goodness you don't have more guns, Great Britain. You would have a lot more to grieve. Because, you see, just as if this were the case to have happened in, say, Australia, or some other civilized country that has a civilized approach to firearms, well, there's going to be a great deal of upset in the UK over the next few days, and justifiably so. But there's a difference between something like this happening in the UK or some other civilized country and having it happen in the United States, and the difference is this. There's no one out there that I'm aware of. I mean, I don't even think that the National Republican Rifle Association would dare say this. There's nobody out there in the United States who will say that Orlando, otherwise known as Aurora, otherwise known as Sandy Hook, otherwise known as Roseburg, Oregon, otherwise known as Tucson, Arizona, otherwise known as Blacksburg, Virginia, etc., etc., etc. There's no one in the United States who will say, well, yeah, that was the last one. That won't happen anymore. That was our last mass murder. I mean, what are the odds? You mean, oh, okay, so we had that one. We probably won't have anything like that again for, you know, years. No, instead, in the aftermath of Orlando, we say, well, it happened. It happened again. And it's probably going to happen again day after tomorrow. Or the day after that, or the day after that. But the one thing we know for certain is that it is going to happen. On the other hand, in the UK, the inquiry will be, how did this happen? Why did this happen? And how can we best make sure that it doesn't happen again? You know, the numbers have been running fairly close as between the Brexit and the stay-in contingents. This may be the thing, as sad as it is, this may be the thing that that keeps Britain in the EU. I read earlier today just a heartrending letter from a 96-year-old decorated RAF pilot holder of the British Distinguished Flying Cross, who said, if you get out of the European Union, you're basically spitting on everything that I and my mates fought to create, that is, a stable Europe that is not always one step away from tearing itself to pieces in war. But that's the essential difference. The British will be horrified, disgusted, and angry that this happened in their country. But the one thing they will not say is, well, stiff upper lip, old boy. It'll probably happen again in a fortnight. They won't do that, because it won't happen again in a fortnight. Whereas in the United States of Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, under God in the universe, amen, it will. It will happen. You know, the other night I mentioned that we had an active shooter situation in West Virginia. A man, and he was a doomsday prepper and a sovereign citizen. And he ambushed some people he decided he didn't like. And then said he ambushed them and murdered them, you know, premeditatedly, because they were stealing his stuff. Now, we haven't gotten there yet in the United States, well, except in some jurisdictions. I think it's legal in Texas to use deadly force in defense of property. But generally speaking, in most states of the Union, it is not legal to use deadly force in defense of property. But we may be headed that way. Who knows? No, Marty, Tommy Mayer is the alleged assassin, M-A-I-R. Marty thought it was a Mr. Mayer. Could this Mr. Mayer be a Muslim by any chance? It would feed the ultranationalists the raw meat they want. Or would this person be an Anders Breivik? Yeah, I'd say he probably falls more on the Anders Breivik side of the... Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to get that story out there early on, because, you know, it's not just the subjects of the crown in the UK that are shocked by this. When the news broke, I was shocked by this, and it's like a little trembler, and one gets the sense. And I don't like the sense I get. That there is, in fact, something most nasty in the offing. It's going to take a lot of coordinated and concerted effort to keep from having roll over the world. Now, I didn't get around to this in the last couple of days, but it should be noted that, and I frankly was surprised, that in the wake of Orlando, otherwise known as the happiest place on earth, vacation destination for the Grim Reaper, because, and again, remember, there was a murder before Orlando. A stalker type murdered a young woman who had been quite popular on some television program called, I think, The Voice? Or America's Got Talent or something? And as she signed autographs, he came up and shot her in the head. Because freedom.
Wolverines!
Kind of sang it there. With the reverb, it's not so bad, me singing, huh? But I was a little surprised to see that the NRA. Yeah, it was The Voice. Okay. Thanks, Angry. It's a little bit surprised to see that the National Republican Rifle Association actually addressed the killings, the murders, and the maimings, and the woundings, and the harmings, shootings in Orlando. A nasty piece of work by the name of Chris W. Cox, who used to be a member of Different Cox. God, he's probably, you know what? He's probably somehow or another distantly related to the woman who was murdered today in the UK. But he is... he's the legislative director or something with the NRA. Frankly, I don't care. He's just another slimy, scummy, blood-covered, goddamn monster. But Chris Cox actually sat down and wrote, or someone wrote for him, a response to the massacre in Orlando. And USA Today did him the kindness of publishing it. Americans were shocked and disgusted to learn of another act of terrorism on our soil, this time in Orlando. Disgusted? Yeah, okay, I'll buy in on disgusted, but Chris Cox, the disgust is at you, buddy. You miserable misanthrope. You sad and sorry excuse for a member of the human race. In the aftermath of this terrorist attack, President Obama and Hillary Clinton renewed calls for more gun control, including a ban on whole categories of semi-automatic firearms, what are referred to now as modern sporting rifles. Interestingly, the inventor of the AR-15 did not consider it a sporting rifle. He considered it a piece of military ordnance, a piece of military hardware. But just as yesterday, Senator Elizabeth Warren introduced her new phrase, Rambo-style weapons, the gun monsters out there have come up with a new euphemism. They're referring to things like that Sig Sauer and the AR-15 and the Bushmaster and things like that as modern sporting rifles. Yes. Including a ban on whole categories of semi-automatic firearms. Or you could say, including a ban on a whole category of firearms routinely used to slaughter massive numbers of American citizens. You know, innocent ones. They are desperate to create the illusion that they're doing something to protect us because their policies can't and won't keep us safe. Well, you know, there's a kernel of truth in that now, isn't there? Their policies can't and won't keep us safe because the goddamn Congress, that is a wholly owned subsidiary of the National Rifle Association, will not permit those policies to keep us safe. This transparent head fake should scare every American because it will do nothing to prevent the next attack. No, Chris Cox, but it would prevent the next attacker from using a weapon that'll fire something like, you know, 41, 42, 50, 125, 220, 225, whatever it takes. No, a lot of rounds per minute in the next attack. and there just aren't a whole lot of wheel gun pistols out there that'll hold 30 rounds of 223 ammunition. Oh, the manipulation of language is beautiful. The terrorist in Orlando had been investigated multiple times by the FBI. He had a government-approved security guard license with a contractor for the Department of Homeland Security. Yet his former co-workers reported violent and racist comments. Unfortunately, the Obama administration's political correctness prevented anything from being done about it.
Really?
One of his co-workers called Barack Obama and said, you know, I got this real racist, homophobic asshole that I work with, and Barack Obama said, well, that's too bad. Because of political correctness, and because I am a Kenyan Muslim usurper, we cannot do anything about that. You just be quiet.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that didn't happen.
But in a way, it's a good thing that this thing wound up on Thorn in the Side Thursday, because this is a real... yeah, I mean, it hurts. Radical Islamic terrorists are not deterred by gun control laws.
Well, you know, they kind of would be. If a radical Islamic terrorist, and, you know, for the sake of argument, I'll use your stupid semantics. If we had sensible gun laws in this country, a radical Islamic terrorist would be a lot harder pressed to lay hands on the kind of weapon that one needs if one hopes to kill, say, 49 human beings over a very short period of time, like particularly that Sig Sauer, which was approved for use for sale in the American market in 2015. Mm-hmm. Radical Islamic terrorists are not deterred by gun control laws. So maybe they want to kill, but if all they could get their hands on were hammers, wouldn't it be an entirely different situation? I mean, as horrible as it is, and it was horrible, the asshole in the UK today killed one person, not 51. A furious right-winger like that in the United States could kill 51, not just one. And he wouldn't even need a knife for backup, because freedom.
Wolverines!
Right? The San Bernardino terrorist attack wasn't stopped by California's so-called assault weapons ban.
Well, you know what? That's because the guy and the American citizen in San Bernardino got somebody to buy the gun for him, and you can still buy the gun. It's the availability of the gun. This guy's no good at what he does, is he? He can't even make his own argument because it keeps coming back to the availability of the firearm.
Ah, you know, when sledgehammers are outlawed, only outlaws will have sledgehammers. The gun ban in Brussels didn't prevent the terrorist attack there.
Except for the fact that they had to work really, really hard to get the firearms into Brussels. In point of fact, had Brussels had gun laws like the United States, one may cogently argue that the bloodshed would have been massively more awful. I mentioned a little bit ago Europe's long historical proclivity for periodically engaging in massive amounts of bloodletting. Well, a great deal of that was done before the 20th century, that part of it, was mostly done with muskets, and before that, swords, and well, God, you know, there's, Poitiers and Agincourt, where it was done with arrows. And there was a time when France, in the aftermath of the Crusades,
when all the Crusaders came home and, well, you know, they were used to slaughtering anybody that any Muslim that they saw. And, well, damn. They got back and they got bored real fast. And they marauded across the French countryside. No one was safe, nowhere. Bands of privately armed armies basically just terrorizing the countryside. I mean, it was real. We're talking about slightly before the Black Death. But can you imagine a Belgium or a France, knowing what we know and how we grieved over the Charlie Hebdo attacks and the attacks at the nightclub and the Belgian attack? Can you imagine how manifestly worse they would have been if any old terrorist wannabe could walk into a gun store and say, "Aloha snack bar, I want a Sig Sauer." So while Chris Cox is nominally correct that gun bans did not stop the attack in Brussels or Paris, it is also true that gun bans there have prevented them from being monumentally, exponentially worse. "Repeating the same thing but expecting a different result," Cox continues, "is the definition of insanity." Well, yes, it is, dipshit. And that's why your theory that we should just keep letting people buy all the goddamned semi-automatic assault rifles that they want to is going to lead to an insane result. Well, okay, not insane, more like horrifying, see also tragic, compare favorably with horrendous. "Law-abiding gun owners are tired of being blamed for the acts of madmen and terrorists." Well, then let them do something about it. But they can't, can they? Oh, they're armed to the teeth in case that Kenyan Muslim usurper comes for their guns. But they can't do anything. They can't do anything. They couldn't have prevented Orlando. You march into a darkened nightclub with mirror balls and strobe lights and black lights and all. You do that, Cletus. You hero. "Semi-automatics are the most popular firearms sold in America for sport shooting, hunting, and self-defense." Bullshit. We've already kind of gone over this ground. Anybody who has a semi-automatic assault rifle for home defense is a damn fool and is probably going to kill somebody besides a bad guy with it. 3,000 feet per second, 22 caliber round, with a big old loading dose of powder behind it. There's not much in a house that thing won't penetrate. And as for hunting? No, sorry. I mean, why couldn't we, this is just, why couldn't we have, why couldn't we have a country where you can have, say, all the 270s and 708s and 30-06s and 30-30s you want, but they all have to be like bolt action or a breech loader? I mean, I live in West Virginia. The gun debate is a different... I despise them, but it's a different thing here than it is in, say, compared to, say, you know, downtown Atlanta or downtown New York or downtown Philly or downtown San Francisco or downtown L.A. It's a different debate. I mean, I know some serious, serious hunters. And yes, like I've noted before, they eat what they kill. Unless they're shooting varmints. And varmints are real. But most of the really good hunters I know, yeah, they might go out hunting on some fine November morning with a, say, a Browning 270 with a bolt with bolt action and three rounds and one in the chamber with the safety on. But these people are very, very good at what they do. And you know what? At the end of the day, one bullet may have been used. And it'll be the one bullet that takes down the deer that the hunter is after. Anybody who needs a 30-round magazine to go hunting for anything except human beings ain't much of a hunter. And as for sport shooting, the hell? Does somebody want to explain that to me, please? Congress banned their manufacture for 10 years from 1994 to 2004. The law also mandated an independent study on its effectiveness. The study proved that the ban had no impact because criminals and terrorists are not deterred by gun control laws. To suggest otherwise provides a dangerous sense of false security. We don't need false promises. We need real leadership. Rubber. Rumpf. I got a feeling that the report didn't say what he says it is. Mainly because I'm pretty sure Chris Cox is a goddamn liar. We've got a pretty good memory for this, don't we? We remember our mass murders. That was 1994 to 2004. How many mass murders were there involving semi-automatic assault rifle-style weapons? That should be empirically discernible. It's time for us to admit that radical Islam is a hate crime waiting to happen. Is this Chris Cox or Donald Trump? Does it matter? The only way to defeat them is to destroy them, not destroy the right of law-abiding, pasty-faced, doughy American men to defend themselves when the Kenyan Muslim usurper comes to take their guns, but not defend against anything else. Okay, I added a whole bunch of that. He said, the only way to defend them is to destroy them. The only way to defeat them is to destroy them, not destroy the right of law-abiding Americans to defend themselves. You know what? I actually read this stuff with a critical eye. But I can't help but wonder about anybody who would be convinced by that dreck, who finds that argument compelling. I mean, take just a second, okay? What Chris Cox here has said is that the feelings of people who want to collect weapons of war are more important than a 23-year-old guy at Latin night in a dance club getting to see the sun come up. And when you look at it that way, isn't that infuriating? You know, I can't help wondering if every time Chris Cox jumps into bed with his spouse, if the first thing she says is it in yet? Because this guy is obsessed with weapons. And that's true. Brother Usher Steve says, wait a minute, subject line, more gun control? Doesn't that imply we've had some sort of gun control from Obama? Because, you know what? We haven't. The only gun control from Obama is to make it is that bill that he signed into law that makes it okay to carry guns in national parks. That's some gun control, that Obama gun control. And there you go. That line in there about the terrorists won't obey the law, Marty points out. And maniacal Christian terrorists obey the law? Oh, the law of God! That's the highest law of all. Which sort of takes us to another place. Ever heard of representing Rick Allen of Georgia? No? Well, he's a real piece of work because he loves him some God. I know, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday. But these issues so thoroughly overlap and intertwine, it's impossible to keep them all on one damn day. It was a week or so back, a couple of weeks back. When he and several other legislators were in a meeting. And speaking to them, he said, at the May 26th Republican conference meeting, he read to them from Romans 1:18-32 and Revelations 22:18-19. Quoting from roll call, Allen asked whether he felt the need to make any clarifying statements about his reading of the verses in light of the Orlando tragedy. He said, "Well, I'm imperfect. And I consider that we are all imperfect, and we all fall short of the glory of God, which is why we need a Savior, by the way. The Jews and Muslims and all them people, all them heathens included." Okay, I confess I added the last part. This, then, so he hasn't, he was asked about it. Now that there's 49 dead innocent victims and 53 shot up people, do you feel at all bad representing Allen about the shitty thing you said at that meeting on May 26th? Well, no, I don't. No, I don't. And so, just for the record, here's what he read. "And likewise, also the men..." Oh, they get off on this verse. They love it. They love it. They love it. "And likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust toward one another. Men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet." You know, that's surprisingly vague. Now, if you're obsessed with sex, like, you know, representing Allen, you go, "Oh, that's clearly about your homosexual conduct." Leaving the natural use of the woman. Well, that certainly is nice. The natural use of the woman. Because that's what women are there for, to be, you know, used. Well, I tell you what, that's some liberating theology there in that New Testament, that St. Paul. I tell you, he loved him some women folk. Not much. And then there's Revelations. "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient." Wait. I mean, I realize we're dealing with the King James Version here, but really? I mean, you're going to use language like that to do things which were not convenient. Not convenient? So now, I mean, if we're going to read this in some sexual context, women are matters of convenience? I reiterate the fact that I cannot fathom why any woman would ever be willing to participate in any of the Abrahamic religions. Although this is particularly Christianity. To do those things which are not convenient. I'm just trying to think of what John of Patmos, half mad out of his mind on that miserable little island. I'm just trying to think of what he meant, you know, when he thought of it, you know. Certainly would be convenient if a boat would come by here and I could get off this fucking rock. It'd be nice and convenient. Well, isn't that convenient? Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate. Really? Debate? Debate's inconvenient now. Well, I guess to some it is. Deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. Did you pick up on the... Where's the gay part of that? I'm kind of at a loss. Unless gay people are all of those things. And remember, if you're looking at that from a diagramming a sentence kind of standpoint, these are all inconveniences. I can't wait until the day that I hear Tony, Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins of the American, of the, wait, who the, it's not the American Family Association, it's the national, whoever, is, you know, the reason we got to protect marriage is because the homosexuals are so inconvenient. Inconvenient. Who, knowing the judgment of God, that which they commit, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them.
What, Edith, huh?
But they get all, you know, to the extent that one could even tell, you know, they get all stiff and worked up and hot and bothered when they get to read about the death part. Would any of you be surprised to find that this representing Alan Creep, Representative Rick Allen, watches snuff films? Because I wouldn't be. I can't wait till we get to the death in part. Inventors of evil things. Like chaps? I mean, out you what? Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, and maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. That's a lot of shitty things to say about somebody just for not loving somebody the way that you think that your brutal, vicious, Bronze Age God thinks. Oh, who out of love made them that way? Right, sort of that. I can't. But it is, after all, Thorn in the Side Thursday. So we will take a little break. And then open up the phone lines. You're welcome to jump in, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn, from anywhere on the planet. Or there's always the stress line, 304-663-4676. It being Thorn in the Side Thursday and all, and thus a Thursday, we also have upcoming the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to that. And I might even have an addendum to the Green News Report for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Might afford us an opportunity to kind of step back a little bit from the horror, the horrific, mind-numbing misery of Orlando. Because we do, and I don't mean to, I hope I'm not taken as being in any wise rude about this. I don't know about you, and if somehow or another this is wrong of me to say, please tell me. But it almost gets to the point where you feel like you can't even contemplate these things anymore. At least from the inside of my skull. Oh, well, there's a summer thunderstorm coming down. If the program should peremptorily disappear and you go, what happened to Bob? Well, that means that, you know, some thunder rolled somewhere or... you know, a butterfly farted and the internet connection went boogity. So that's just an advance warning. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We try to raise $200 every evening. We have raised precisely zero here at 3 minutes before the hour. Hopefully that will not persist, because that's what keeps this all going. But it is. It's Conversation Radio. It's The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, June 16, 2016.
People know what Republicans are against. Now, we're going to give you a plan that shows you what we are for.
Turns out, House Republicans are for rolling back pollution standards. The streak continues. May 2016 was the hottest May on record. Power plants no longer the nation's largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. New study finds President Obama's clean power plan will save Americans $38 billion a year. Plus,
global warming and that, a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax.
Donald Trump was for climate action before he was against it.
Speaking of hoaxes, all of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Take a look at the Keystone Pipeline.
I can't. President Obama rejected it. Thanks, Obama. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, shocking news to hear that May 2016 is again the hottest May ever recorded on planet Earth.
Yeah, I know. And Republicans still don't care. They've, of course, earned a reputation for being against environmental regulations. But in case that wasn't absolutely clear, House Speaker Paul Ryan has issued a new agenda for regulations in the coming year.
Let's face it. People know what Republicans are against. Now, we're going to give you a plan that shows you what we are for.
That plan shows what Republicans are for is rolling back federal regulations that protect workers and the environment. The new agenda, entitled A Better Way, is pretty much the old one, blocking pollution regulations from the EPA, the Interior Department, and other agency regulations that protect public health, and, of course, all action on climate change. If you like your asthma and you like toxic mercury in all your fish, you can keep it, say Republicans. Now, remember, all seats in the House of Representatives are up for election in November. And as we like to say here, elections have consequences.
And so what they're calling for is for all of these federal agencies, instead of issuing regulations, they want all of these regulations to be voted on, each and every one in Congress, right?
Right. If you like your gridlock, you can keep that too.
Apparently so.
Meanwhile, the planet continues to ignore politics. May 2016 was the hottest May on record for the planet, according to NASA, and that in itself is another record. After the hottest April, the hottest March, the hottest February, and so on, May 2016 is now the 13th straight month in a row to finish as the hottest ever for that month.
That's weird, because Paul Ryan, at his press conference on Wednesday, talking about the new agenda for Republicans, said,
"We're saying, base your decisions on sound science, not science fiction."
And yet, the Republican agenda. Go figure.
Power plants are no longer America's biggest contributor to climate change. Transportation is. The nation's power plants have made remarkable progress in cutting emissions of planet-warming carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. The trend is expected to hold as car makers adopt higher fuel economy standards and the use of electric cars expands, powered by clean electricity. But there is no low-carbon solutions yet for heavy trucks, machinery, or airplanes.
But plans are in the works. Tesla, I see, has now started working with Mack Truck to start building electric garbage trucks. So It's coming.
Further cutting emissions from power plants will save Americans $38 billion a year. That's according to a new analysis from Harvard University, which finds that implementing President Obama's landmark Clean Power Plan, the first ever emissions standards for power plants, that will save Americans $38 billion a year from avoided health care costs, from all of the asthma attacks, strokes, cancer, heart and lung disease caused by toxic air pollution that we won't be having. Finally, presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has famously declared his rejection of climate science.
Global warming and that, a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax.
But Trump was apparently for climate action before he was against it. The folks at Grist.org have unearthed an advertisement in the New York Times from 2009, right before the United Nations Climate Change Treaty Conference in Copenhagen. In that advertisement, a group of business leaders called for aggressive action on climate change, and Trump signed that letter all the way back in 2009.
And so at one of Trump's golf courses, he asked for a seawall to protect from climate change, and he signed on to that ad calling on people to do something about climate change.
Exactly.
So when Trump says climate change is a hoax, it turns out the hoax is actually him calling climate change a hoax.
There you go.
Got it. Thank you, Desi Doyen. For all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Everybody plays the fool sometimes. Exception to the rule. Listen, baby, it may be factual, it may be cruel. I ain't lying. Everybody plays a fool.
And about 6 minutes past the hour, a note coming in from one of the Trinity of Steve. Subject line, lyricism, going back to the bumper music. What they do? An assertion, not a question. Depends on what you're hearing. Good pick. You can't go wrong with the OJs. Yeah. Actually, the line out of Revelations was backbiters, but I saw that and I went, oh, backstabbers. Yeah, yeah. It's hell being a frustrated old pop DJ. Hey, thank you very kindly to our buddy Paul. Thank you, Paul, for getting us started this evening. Oh, God, again with the ciphering. So now we've got $186.50 to go. $186.50 to go in fundraising for this evening. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly for getting us started. $186.50 to go to get us to keep us, well, from going into Friday on the front porch, you know, in a hole. Hey, let's run over to the Skype line and check in with our buddy, the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man. What's going on?
I don't know. You dug the OJ's choice, right?
The what now?
The OJ's, the bumper. You like the bumper
music.
Yeah,
I mean, I said it was a good it's a good choice.
Yeah, see, I think there's a little DJ soul in you too.
Not really. I'm not that. I'm not hip enough for that sort of thing.
Like I am.
No, it's just Uncle Tom's really not good at that because, you know, we're too all over the goddamn board. You know, I'll play a boy named Sue next to Farrell Sanders, you know. So that will fuck people up. So that we're not good at that. Because, you know, we see irrelevance. You dig what I'm saying? So,
yeah. Wait. But what's this? An Uncle Tom is no good at. Did you just call yourself an Uncle Tom?
I am what I am. But you got to understand something. You know, there's the Uncle Tom from Harriet Beecher Stowe's book, and then there's the real Uncle Tom who took a bunch of, you know, slaves up to Canada with him. There's
true.
A difference. Right. So, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, I'm used to dealing with white people. I'm comfortable around white folks. And I'm the type, I really don't see myself as being any different than any other white person in the United States. I'm born and raised here. This is my first fucking language, right? But at the same time, I realize who I am. I have no shame in what the hell I am. And I take a pride in the fact that I am what I am and my people have survived as long as we have. So when I hear race neutral shit about, well, we're all Americans, I mean, that's all cool. But, you know, what is an American? And why do I have to erase my history and what, you know, that makes me as an individual and how I have to walk through the world and so on? You know, why should I get rid of that so that you as a white person have to feel, you know, as a way for you as a white person to feel comfortable about yourself? And while this sounds completely unrelated, think about what happened here in Orlando and think about what the fuck this happened in England that you mentioned. You have this Afghani who was born in what, New York City, right?
Yeah, you're talking about Omar Mateen? Yeah.
Yeah.
More particularly, so, he was born in Queens.
He was born in Queens, which, from what I understand, is a diverse part of that city. So,
well, it was so diverse that Donald Trump's daddy participated in a Nazi march against diversity as far back as, like, 1927.
Yeah, and he's of German descent, but this was an Italian group.
Clan. It was a Klan march.
Well, he was going there in support of an Italian group that was backing up the Klan, an Italian Nazi group that, you know, was down with Mussolini and what have you. Because, I mean, how many
kind of makes you wonder if Fat Tony Scalia's daddy was there.
You know, it's entirely possible because the Sons of Italy and the Knights of Columbus all have loose affiliations with fascist movements in Europe. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I mean, Fat Tony's pappy was actually the head of the pro-Mussolini fanboy club in the United States until it became, like, treason to be that.
There you go. See, I didn't even know that. There you go. There you go. I already knew he was Opus Dei, but that doesn't surprise me. You know, one goes along with the other, hand in hand. So what I'm trying to say is here you have this this Afghan who born and raised in the United States. But when you look at his jacket, for whatever reason, I mean, he was confused about who he was and how he fit into the society because he wasn't able to be out. And then he works for this super macho goddamn security service, which is responsible for deaths all over the world, right? In every country they operate in. They're known to be abusers. And we already know how jacked up the private prison industry is. I mean, the state prison system is bad enough. The private prison, I mean, it's for profit. So here he is. He's on Grindr. Both his wives said, yeah, he's closeted. He's homosexual. He's gay. He's self-hating, you know, homosexual man. He beats the shit out of me because, you know, he hates his fucking self.
Well, you know what? And you know what's particular? There's plenty of pain to go around coming out of Orlando angry. But if there is a group that is suffering particularly, I mean, any culture that is imbued with a bunch of machismo is going to be particularly hard for a man to be gay in. It's not easy to be, well, it's not easy to be, you know, despite the It Gets Better campaign and everything, it's not easy for anybody to be gay, okay? Unless one goes somewhere where one is comfortable and welcomed and protected. But, a culture like, the macho Arabian cultures, and I'm not even going to use the word Islam, macho Middle Eastern cultures, because you can find the same thing in the Jewish community, you can find the same thing in Muslim communities. I mean, and remember, all these biblical proscriptions that all of these pasty-faced, doughy white men are quoting all come from that place. Gay Middle Eastern men are particularly anguished, based on what I've read, at all of this, because it's kind of like a double whammy. It wasn't okay for them to be gay in the first place, and now they're looked at suspiciously because they're gay Middle Eastern men, because of the nature of the culture. And, you know, what the hell on earth that is? You know, it's brutally difficult to be. I mean, it was Latin night at the Pulse nightclub, and being gay in the Latino world, that's not a walk in the park either.
No, I mean, it isn't. But see, you know, you're talking about two separate cultures, but there's one thing that does tie both of them. The concept of machismo.
Yeah, that hyper-masculine, right, that was my point.
Yeah, well, yeah, but see, but one of the things about that, though, and people who really understand the gay community, who really, know that these demi-monde, sort of little tidbits, know full well that in Latin America, in a lot of the Arab world, in the African world, and of course within the European world, it's different, and we can argue about why. But the point that I'm saying is, you have a thing where if you're dealing with a transgendered woman, if you're dealing with a very effeminate male, someone who pretty much plays the social role of the bottom, or what they consider to be the female role,
submissive.
Yes, the submissive. I mean, depending on what you're into and what you do, the different terms apply. But the bottom line is, you can keep your masculinity in most of these other societies, provided you're the penetrative partner. You're still a male. The person on the other hand you just fucked, well, they're the bottom. That they were, in a way this society looks at it, it's not, sex isn't sharing. The way most societies, we just can't put it on the U.S., the way most, masculine-based, societies go, if you're the one that got fucked, you've just been punked. Be you female and be you male.
Well, it goes back to that Bible verse where women have natural uses and women are convenient. What a beautiful way to describe half the species, huh?
Well, that's the way to keep that side of the species in line, by reminding them. I mean, like in the Bible, I don't remember exactly what part it is. Two men are having a dispute over money, and then they start to grapple with each other. So one of them is losing, and that individual's wife, ran up and grabbed the testicles of the male that was beating her husband. She was put to death. And this was considered justified because whatever their dispute was, these were two men going at it. And the fact that, if she had hit him with a brick in the head or something, it would have been a lot easier for her. But the fact that she grabbed his testicles challenged, male domination, the subject of male domination, the symbol of male domination. So for that alone, this is what the biblical scholars say. She was put to death. Because as a woman, she was, making an argument that I can do damage to you, and this is the symbol of your bullshit, even though that's not what the dispute was about. Her being female put her in a position that she was still supposed to be submissive, even if she was defending her husband. And to touch or put at risk the symbol of male domination in that society, she deserved death, because that's what God wanted. I can't remember what section this in, but it's... It's in the first book.
Oh, I'm sure it's in there. I mean, I have no doubt that, because it's the filthiest book ever written.
Well, one of them anyway. But anyway, going back to this Mateen cat, the point is, as you pointed out, here he is, he's Afghanistan. Yeah, I mean, his parents are from Afghanistan, even though he's born and raised in New York. And of course, when you're in between like that, you have that weight. You have uncles, even if it's not your nuclear family. You have uncles and cousins and your neighbors and everybody else that you deal with in your community that reinforces these ideas. But at the same time, what's the contradiction going on in Afghanistan? I've talked with you about it. I've talked about it on my show, where you have the U.S. military cannot stop the Afghan trainees, the Afghan police and security forces.
Right, from raping little boys.
Yeah, they can't stop them. I watched the Marine lieutenant say, I got a family back home and I got to sit here and deal with these bastards and trying to get them to stop. You get excuse after fucking excuse. He's like, I want to put a stop to this shit, but my superiors are telling me I can't do anything. And then you had the situation of Donald Rumsfeld being questioned by that about this, because DynCorp was found to have done this with American taxpayer money, paying for the Baka Bessie, you know, the if I pronounce that correctly, the dancing boys over there, for these crooks that they're paying over there, these warlords. And Rumsfeld said, yeah, well, you know, it was Cynthia McKinney, actually, who asked him this. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, they were put into the penalty box, and then, you know, they were good for a little while, so we took them out of the penalty box. And they're still doing that? Oh, wow. Well, you know, we'll have to check that out, because, you know, it's one of those known unknowns. And the more we look at these things, you know, we'll figure out more of these unknowns that we really didn't know about before. You know, all that doublespeak to basically excuse the fact that they were, you know, involved in this and turned a blind eye to it, because this was the only way they could get the goddamn oil and bullshit that they needed without having to lose more fucking American personnel. They said, fuck it, we'll just let you do it. I mean, there's a case right now that's been going on for several years with UN peacekeepers that are doing this in India and in Africa, abusing children, abusing women, and nobody's doing anything the fuck about it. So, you know, we have these contradictions, and then you have this particular fucking jerk, regardless of whatever his cultural background was, he's born and raised in the motherfucking United States. But, again, contradictions. He's a macho son of a bitch. You see him wearing the official police garb that you can buy as a civilian of the New York City Police Department. I've seen at least two, if not three, of these different shirts in the selfies that he was taking of himself all the time. He was not a police officer. And, you know, come on, Bob, you know as well as I do, you have a lot of fellas who cannot pass the psychological goddamn, you know, and sometimes even the written exam for their local police department, and in lieu of that, become security guards and bouncers.
Wannabes.
Wannabes. And they walk around with the official Smith & Wesson cuffs. They get the official garb that's available from their local jurisdiction or another one that sells that crap online, because I've dealt with these morons. And they walk around and they want that type of authority. They want to hurt somebody. They get off on it. They get off on it. They have inferiority issues, because I've dealt with men like this. And he was one of them. And on top of all of that machismo bullshit, here he was on Grindr. Straight men do not go to Grindr, even to look at Grindr. I know several women, not friends of mine, but women who have told me they found their boyfriends and husbands on Grindr. Just, you know, on a lark, went and looked and put his name in and found their fucking profile. So he was one of them. And he was out there looking for men, and evidently, there's a dispute now, because the owners of the club say that he was not a frequent member, or I mean a frequent visitor, but there are people who saying he was dating somebody that I knew. Yeah, I knew him. He was here all the goddamn time. He flitted around this community all the time. So, you know, there's a lot of contradictions that come into this on like how we can deal with it, because, or at least be able to analyze it. His father's saying that he saw two gay black men kissing. But then supposedly he tells the people he was holding hostage in the restroom that he was going to exclude the black people from his violence because they've suffered enough. The man was not wrapped too tight. He was psychotic. Supposedly, he calls the police and says that he was connected to Daesh, but they haven't...
And Hezbollah. Don't forget the Hezbollah part.
Oh, he claimed that too? Even though Hezbollah is fighting a death struggle with goddamn Daesh?
Yes.
See? Yeah, so, you know, either... I know that there's conspiracy theories that got...
And see, there's an issue that we can blow past real easily in this. And maybe it just speaks to the adaptive nature of the human animal, Angry. But it's this. If he was not tied down real tight, and in a way this reminds me of the horrifying scenario that Carol shared with us a month or so back of the decidedly not even marginally okay schizophrenic woman in a little community near where she lives out near Hooterville. She got her disability check and walked into a gun store and bought a gun, which her family then took from her. Okay? They went to the gun store and said, listen, please, our daughter is deeply mentally ill. Here, I'm going to write her name down for you. I'll give you a picture if need be. She's got a fixation on guns, and if she comes in here to buy a gun, please, in the name of all that is holy, don't sell her a gun. Now, what happened? She got her next disability check. She went to the very same gun store. She put the money on the counter. And they sold her the gun. And she went home and killed her daddy. This is one of the essential flaws in this entire discussion. I mean, we talk about databases. A database isn't worth a good goddamn if the only thing the gun store owner cares about is making the sale. And I say all of this angry preface as preface to the idea of I want to know more about the guy who sold this weapon to Omar Mateen. Because if this guy was as nasty as he is being described to us as, how does that not come out in the course of the firearm transaction? Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you would think if there was so well. Wait a minute. You know, now that I'm thinking about it, you know why? Because when you do a little goddamn research, you'll find out that the reason that these motherfuckers were able to legally get these goddamn guns is because the Republican fucking party decided that they were going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that everybody who has cash, as you said, can buy one. Because they're lobbied heavily by the fucking NRA, which went from being a shooting club of vets back in the day to become the number one goddamn fascist, you know. I mean, basically, they've taken the space that the John Birch Society used to occupy.
Well, I think they've got the same membership.
Well,
but I mean, there's a larger issue here, and that is, and I'm talking about from a, oh, I don't know, what are we going to call it? A systems analysis approach. Laws are only as good as the people who are willing to obey them. I mean, you know, the NRA makes that argument all the damn time. Well, you know, banning these weapons isn't going to make a damn bit of difference because criminals don't care about laws. Well, there have been investigations, there have been cases of gun store after gun store after gun store that doesn't give a good goddamn about the laws relating to who may and may not buy firearms. And so, you know, the guy could have come in with a clown suit on, and as long as he checks that box on that form that says, nope, I ain't nuts, you get a gun! As long as you got, you know, in this case, the $1,700 to put on the table in order to obtain same, because capitalism.
Well, yes, capitalism.
It's all just business.
Well, yeah, that's true, and that's a factor. But just like everything else that goes on in the universe, nothing is monolithic. That is a big fucking factor in terms of the business community. They want to be able to sell a product. They make guns, they make munitions, whatever the fuck else. The U.S., everybody goddamn knows this. You can go right to the UN.org website and look at this for yourself. Who is selling the most fucking munitions and other weaponry in the world? And the United States is number one by a mile. All right. So, you know, that is a big fucking factor. They don't want to lose any goddamn money, and war and conflict and despair is big business. You know, is constant money for them. But there's another aspect that on why it is allowed to go as far as it is going. Look at the politicians and the system in which we live in. We have a political party that talks about legitimate rape and is still considered to be a legitimate political party. We have a, you know, thing going on, a meme in that political party that says that when the daughter of the president you know, when her birthday comes around, that is completely appropriate, appropriate under free speech rules, to call her a monkey, to say that she's growing up to be a beautiful gorilla like her mother. And no one is losing their goddamn job behind this. We have judges. We have generals to send emails to each other like this. Every now and again, one of them gets fired because they have to make the appearance that we're not going to tolerate this. But this is the mainstream. We have doctors in the goddamn United States who don't believe that black people feel pain. In 2016, I can prove this. So, you know, we should not be surprised by the type of hate and confusion that we have, be it with homosexuality. A lot of people are fucking flipping out about this. And, you know, in the case of this Mateen cat, evidently he didn't know if he had a problem with white people or if he liked white people. He didn't know if he had a problem with gay folks or if he hated them. Black people, he couldn't make up his goddamn mind. You know, obviously he wanted to be in charge and be over some fucking buddy. And something made him snap. We really don't know what the fuck made it snap. But like you just said, for him to, you know, talk about Hezbollah and Daesh makes absolutely no motherfucking sense. But as far as the RNC is concerned, they need this. They need people like this to get guns, which is one goddamn thing. Because even Newt Gingrich, you can go on YouTube and find this. He said that the United States should allow a terrorist attack every now and again. He said this on C-SPAN, that the United States should allow a terrorist attack every now and again to prove that there's a real threat. Because somebody asked him at a speech, how come we haven't been attacked? And he goes, I really don't know. But every now and again, we should allow one just so people realize that there's a problem. So that way we can monitor everybody. That's
in exactly other words, just to keep people good and terrified.
Just to keep them terrified, right? That's what he said. So that's what, that's another aspect of it. And one of the most important things in which you and I have both talked about this is, they have screamed about mental checks and any kind of registration, because if you have to go through that, how many of these motherfuckers will be eligible for a goddamn gun? Because one of the other fucking factors is these unstable people, these fucking sociopathic sons of bitches who will use violence against an abortion center, who will shoot people in churches and so on to, you know, to get what they want using religion. I mean, they call themselves the army of God, but yet, you know, nobody in law enforcement seems to believe it's a real fucking thing. But on the other hand, you know, all the other organizations and crapola that they come up with, no evidence, but they're real. So here we have a situation where the NRA is basically pushing for sedition, and they make the argument themselves. I'm not putting words in their mouth. You need what? G. Gordon Liddy. You need to have an armed populace to keep the government in check. Meaning what? That if the government does something that they don't like, they're going to do what? You know, they're going to do what? What are they really talking about, Brother Bob, when they're talking about, well, I need 500 goddamn assault rifles to hunt because, you know, one day they might, you know, decide to come and take my guns. Then, and I asked the guy one time, so what are you saying that you're going to do? And he got up and walked away from me. And I said, no, I want an answer from you. You're the one making the thing that you need all this weaponry in case the government does what. So what are you talking about doing? I want to hear you say it out loud. And he got the fuck up and walked out. Because that's what this bullshit is about. When Obama got into office, that really ramped up the argument. Because it used to be a simply white supremacist argument that a lot of fucking folks were embarrassed to be connected to. But when Obama came into office, we're going to take it back. We shouldn't be surprised about the racism of Donald Trump and his motherfucking violent-ass goddamn followers. They said it the last time. We're going to take it back. And he lost that goddamn election. So he did two terms. This whole thing is about white people taking America back. So if you got a bunch of psychotic, racist, motherfucking paranoid bastards running around who know that if they have to go through a psychological evaluation and a motherfucking criminal background check that they can't get a gun, of course their motherfucking legislative representatives are going to argue against all of that. They're going to argue against it. Just like the meat motherfucking corporations refusing to check for mad cow disease. Still, they refuse to. In Europe, you do it, period. You want to stay in business, that's what the fuck you have to do.
Well, you know, I got an interesting inquiry here from Brother Deacon Asa, who says, one wonders if this sumbitch Mateen was a fucking Republican. I have $5 that I'm willing to invest in the wagering industry that he was.
Of course he was. Of course he was. Of course he was. Just like the motherfucker who shot the politician in the UK today was a goddamn white supremacist.
He was a white supremacist and mentally ill.
And mentally ill. Which you have to be mentally ill any goddamn way to be a fucking racial supremacist of any goddamn stripe. Yeah, I know a lot of brothers get mad at me, but fuck that, man.
That's an interesting point, Angry.
Shit is bullshit too.
That's an interesting point. You know, it took eons to get gay and trans out of the DSM-4 or the DSM series. Mm-hmm. At what point in time does white supremacist in there?
No, it should be. So should religious celery, not religious belief, but religious celery. It should goddamn be there. It should fucking be there because, you know, well first off, we got to be very clear, too, because this is one of the reasons why this bullshit gets, you know, so out of goddamn hand and we go into circular discussions that never go anywhere. You know, racism is not an attitude. Racism implies a system. Systematic fucking marginalizations based on concepts of race and ethnicity. Because race isn't a scientific fucking construct. But even then, the term racism exactly says what the fuck I just defined. Now, bigotry, anybody can be a fucking bigot. But a bigot without power is just that, a bigot. Now, you might have an odd situation in the United States where you have a Latino. When I say Latino, okay, let's be specific. Maybe you have a Puerto Rican property owner who has five rental units and doesn't want to rent to the people from the Dominican Republic and Venezuelans because of a prejudice against them. He'll rent to Mexicans, he'll rent to Colombians, but will not rent to Dominicans and Venezuelans. Now, in the Latin, you know, in the Latin world, you know, there's biases against, you know, different populations, not just because of nationality, but because of the idea, well, you have more black blood in you than we do, so you're basically niggers and we're not.
Well, but that goes back to the whole corruption of the blood breakdown that the Spanish introduced into the New World. Octoroons and yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true in how these things work out. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but one of the things I want to argue here, though, too, is that in Africa, you know, like say the Tutsi and the, you know, during the Rwandan genocide, the Tutsi and the Hutus, to the average person who was not from that part of Africa, they just looked like black folks, right?
Sure.
But one group felt that they were lighter skinned and had more angular features than the other. And consider themselves to be better. And of course, when and already abusing this group, and then when the British came in, they just simply took advantage of this other group being ostracized and exacerbated it. And when they left, not the British, but the Belgians, and when they left, they went after each other because now they were able to take revenge, and it wasn't logical revenge, it was just tribal bullshit because of, you know, justified by past abuses and ongoing abuses, right? So, you know, we really have to, it's important to put it on Europeans where Europeans can directly be held responsible. But we have to be clear that if we don't, you know, if we keep putting this on white people, we already have Latinos, you know, by their own definition, Latino, not mine. To me, they're Spanish-speaking Indian people, but by their own definition, Latino, they're the largest ethnic group, in the United States now. And when they do eventually, you know, become the majority here, black people are not going to be any better off under them than they were under Europeans. And people who doubt me can look at these societies of Veracruz and Oaxaca right in Mexico, which are primarily black Indian communities that are treated like shit.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Right? And Oaxaca is treated the way it's treated because they're Indian and they refuse to apologize for it. But they send Indian soldiers down there under mestizo commanders to smash the Indian resistance. So we really have to be clear about abuse and how ethnicity works and how racism works and what it really means. You know,
One other thing with regard to this Mateen character, this monster. What about Daddy? Are you aware, Angry, that he has run an opposition Afghan broadcast for more than a decade?
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen any details yet. I just haven't had the time.
It's like the Durga Jirga or Dickhead Jirga. I forget what, but it's beamed into Afghanistan.
Who's paying for it?
There's my question.
Where is it based? Where is beaming into Afghanistan?
Well, I mean, he was out of Florida, and
he was beamed from the U.S.
Yeah,
out of Florida,
and half of Florida, half of Florida is a damn CIA front. Angry.
Oh my God. Oh man, really?
Really?
Hey, like the names Posada Carriles come to mind, Orlando Bosch, Radio Mati.
Even though we've got an ostensibly somewhat friendly relationship with the Afghan government, it has been proven over the last 5-6 years that it's not really the relationship that we would like to have. I mean, to wit, total compliance. Who was the previous president? Come on.
I got his face.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
He used to work for Unocal, whose brother was assassinated.
That dude. He started telling us off Karzai. Yeah, he started telling us off for, you know, barreling through doors in the middle of the night and that kind of sleazy shit. And so, you know, you can almost imagine the CIA, just sort of needling a little bit, just, you know, keeping the pressure up. And
it's possible. I've never heard of it.
I hadn't either until I read the last word, the first word begins with a D, and the last word is Jirga, which is, of course, the tribal council sort of gathering body, you know, for lawmaking purposes, whatever. But this guy, yeah, the daddy's been doing that for more than 10 years. And then, you know, son gets a cushy, well, it's not how cushy it is, it's hard to say. Son gets a job with a DHS private security contractor, i.e. mercenary outfit. Mm-hmm. And then quite possibly the weirdest thing I've seen about him is something that was done, that was reported by Sky News. There's a documentary out several years now about the BP Horizon disaster and about how shoddily and sleazily that was handled. And, of course, there were security guards hired for that. Well, there was a documentary called The Big Fix, and they stuck the camera in a security guard's face. Check this out.
And with undercover cameras to see if she could pry more information from BP's night crew.
Morning.
Good morning. Do you have a badge?
No, I'm actually just wondering what's going on here.
Oh, it's for BP, like the oil spill.
Is there any way that I could talk to any of the people that are out there working?
Like, there's people out here, but they're all scattered all over the place. There's no one really to talk to, like, any, like, supervisor. No one gives a shit here. Like, everybody just gets out to get paid. They're, like, hoping for more oil to come out and more people to complain so they'll have the jobs. Because once people get laid off here, it's going to suck for them. They want more disaster to happen because that's where their money-making is.
Yeah. It's all about the money, right?
All about the money. Exactly.
We wanted to know what the workers were doing on the beaches in the dark.
That security guard, Angry, is Omar Mateen.
What?
The security guard who says, yeah, nobody gives a shit here. They're hoping more oil comes out so they get paid.
Well, that sounds rational. Not what the fuck he did in Orlando. So what happened?
Well,
see, this is what gets the conspiracy theorists red meat.
okay, but so none of this is probably even relevant. But in the video, his head is shaven, you know, skinhead, and he's got his little security guy costume on, and what happened? This is, you know, this is a guy. This is a guy who will. I mean, he's a mercenary, and he has the mercenary mindset. I mean, there are little instances of this shit just breaking down all over. I don't know if you saw it or not. Probably not. There was a 50-something guy who worked for the UCLA Extension Service just in the past week. Nice guy. Well-loved by his coworkers. A Navy SEAL out of San Diego stabbed him in the head with a sharp object and killed him in Santa Monica.
Because?
No idea.
Wait a minute. A Navy SEAL that's currently in practice, or?
Yeah. He was based out of the Navy SEAL unit at San Diego.
Shit. Well. See, you know, it's really.
Yeah, doesn't that kind of make you want to bark at the moon?
Well, yeah, because.
Because you've got to do something, whether we're talking about Omar Mateen or the guy in the UK, or now, since we're talking about him, this guy in Santa Monica, this Navy SEAL. People, generally speaking, people's brains have to be rewired to turn them into stone killers.
Yes and no. Because if you're not stable to begin with, you understand what I'm saying? If you already
If you're not stable, it's just not a short trip. I mean, it's not a long trip. But the thing is, I mean, so that's him, you know, years ago during the BP Horizon disaster, that audio was. And imagine, you know, there's no more machismo culture than Afghan culture, right? I mean, back to what we were talking about.
With all the contradictions inherent within, yeah.
And Daddy says, well, you know, he became outraged because he saw two black men kissing. Well, how much of a reach is it to say that that was theater that was staged for Daddy?
In what sense?
Well, because you know, to make sure that Daddy knew that he was good and butch.
Possibly. Or the father's just lying because, like I said, this is red meat or conspiracy theorist. I didn't hear any of this. You're telling me that his pops is broadcasting...
Is a propagandist.
It's a propagandist, but we don't know what sort of propaganda, because I've never heard of this thing, into Afghanistan. And then he's connected to this, you know, top flight fucking mercenary unit. And he was at the BP oil spill working and is talking about how they're basically fucking over the public with what was happening over there. We know that he was on Grindr. We know that he's had relationships, or at least attempted to have relationships with other men. And you know, depending on who you want to believe, was at least every now and again came to this place, the Pulse. I mean, what are we supposed to fucking think? He's all over the place.
And one of the saddest things out of all of this is that this new phenomenon that we have in the United States when any one of these things happens is that you've got people who are immediately out there saying, well, wait, why didn't we have video footage of the bloody bodies being brought out of the nightclub? This is clearly a false flag operation. You know, Alex Jones was out there, was hollering false flag within hours. And I've already seen, well, you know, they were all these people were, and there's a term I hate, crisis actors. I'm sure you've seen it as well. But you know, these were all crisis actors. This didn't really happen. How in the world did he get something the size of a semi-automatic assault rifle through the door?
Actually, it's probably not that goddamn difficult. I've seen a video that was passed around. It was part of another documentary I was looking at in the U.S. about a company that was basically trying to sell the metal detectors to the school systems to show them how they could get shotguns and all other types of shit, you know, because of the baggy clothes and what have you. And I was actually surprised that they showed a white kid pulling all this stuff out. You know, it was like, oh, okay. I didn't even realize that it was that easy. So that's, fuck Alex Jones. And, you know, anyone listening who doesn't like that can tell Alex Jones, I said, fuck you, man. You know, you're out here making people crazy. I mean, if anything, we'll probably, if we look around deep enough, find out that this motherfucker was an Alex Jones fan. If he's working for a mercenary unit, whether or not, you know, despite
you mentioned the mercenary unit. There's another question. How is it that you get and keep a job with an outfit that has a contract with the DHS and you've not been through any psychological profiling?
Well, yeah, that's a given. But how the fuck do you get a job that has to go through the DHS like that and they don't fucking realize that your daddy is fucking pumping, you know, propaganda?
Well, that might be why you get the job.
You know, so all of that bullshit is questionable. No matter how you look at it, it's fucking questionable. It's all fucking shady. But, you know, any real investigation in this is going to get muddy by the Alex Joneses, the Red Silver Jay, or whatever the fuck he calls himself. There's about four or five fools that have made their YouTube careers on disputing Sandy Hook, disputing, situations like Orlando, that, you know, these things didn't happen, that what do you say, crisis actors, that it was all staged. You know, again, they're pushing an anti-government rhetoric that we saw actualized by Bundy Ranch takeover or stand down or face off, whatever the fuck you want to call it, one, and Bundy bullshit face off number two over here in fucking Oregon. I mean, all of them are facing trial right now.
Right, but these anti-government types, false flag types, angry. They say that these things are staged in order to take away our guns. Well, at some point, if that's the case, wouldn't there be some evidence somewhere of someone trying to take away guns?
Well, yeah, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Because, I mean, like the filibuster, so used to saying filibuster, the filibuster yesterday in the Senate, they were talking about banning the further future sale of these kinds of weapons. They weren't talking about confiscating any of the weapons in existence.
Yeah, but Brother Bob, you can't build an army if you're limited in your materiel. We've talked about this before. The reason that they left this loophole open is so that they can intimidate and scare and convince enough motherfucking white people and enough of the stupid psychopathic fucking minorities that they can get to go along with them. That if you fucking get enough guns, that if we get enough guns, then we can challenge the fucking federal government. That is what this shit is all about.
Well, I've said that all along. I think that the National Rifle Association is a civilian NGO insurgency against constitutional governance.
Of course it is. They're working around the rules of constitutional government by, instead of becoming a political party, which you can't really do, and which they don't really need to do anyway. They took over the GOP. It's been a slow process. They started working on it with the moral majority bullshit with Jerry Falwell by appealing to people through the God, you know, angle. Anytime you say God, you can get a fuck. I don't give a damn. You're black, white. If you're from fucking, you know, probably Neptune, you fall for that bullshit because it implies that there's some sort of legitimacy behind what the fuck you're doing. It doesn't even matter that whether it's true or not. It's just lazy goddamn intellectualism to go along with a fucking argument like that. And people do it all the fucking time. The GOP and the Democrats have both played into this. Jimmy Carter used to play into that bullshit. He talked about godless, what was it, the Iranians he was talking about? He said godless or the Afghans? I can't remember. It might have been during the Iranian crisis, referring to these people as godless. It was like, what the fuck, man? You know, that's what makes them make the argument that you're not of God, right? So then everybody's talking about God, and then while we're talking about that bullshit, the original political questions are gone. The territorial questions are gone, you know? Because everybody's, you know, like, well, God is on my side and says that it's okay to fucking hate gay folks. So, because what really gets me and my wife, we were sitting around, you know, because she told me, she woke me up to tell me that this happened. And was like, you know, I don't like to wake you up with bullshit like this, but this is what happened in Florida. And it's like, you got to be goddamn kidding me. And it took me less than 3 seconds when I finally got the sleep out of my goddamn eyes to find Christian fucking quotes, Christian arguments, and Christian audio and video talking about doing exactly what this man did. You know, so we have a lot of confusion going on, Brother Bob, because you have motherfuckers out here preaching homophobic, violent homophobia in a Christian sense. But because that's not politically, advantageous to them right now, it's not theologically to their advantage. So they make an argument that, well, we can use this politically by saying, look, the Muslims hate gay people so goddamn much, one of their motherfuckers in the name of ISIS went and shot up these gay people. Because, of course, there's no Christians that have ever gone around shooting up gay people, right?
Or blowing them up. I mean, Timothy McVeigh.
You know, I mean, you had a thing. I don't know why I remember this, but I remember it because it was part of a paper I wrote some time back about, I think it was in the 80s in New York City. There was a gay club called the Ramrod. Somebody jumped out of a taxi cab, with a submachine gun and shot everybody that was standing in front of the club. And the first thing that the gay community said was, he must have been gay. And it turned out that he did frequent the goddamn club. He did frequent the club. And, you know, and I'll say here, you know, not that I'm ashamed of it, but, you know, just my own personal thing. When I was growing up, a lot of people perceived me as being gay, right? Because I didn't, you know, run around in the street really too much and do the type of shit that they did. I went to school. I was in libraries. I had activities. I kept busy.
Right, because but, you know, nothing says gay like being an intellectual.
Well, you know, it's an arbitrary bullshit reason, but people looked at me and was like, "Oh, he looks like a fucking sissy," right? If you remember that term. So there was this, you know, one particular kid that really made my fucking life horrible. Most of my early teenage years, I had to battle this fucking guy, and he lived on my floor in my building. And what I found, you know, he was always calling me a faggot, always telling me how queer I was. And there was another kid that used to do the same thing a few years before that. And I found out later on in my early 20s that both of those motherfuckers were gay, that both of them were closeted, and that basically they were picking on me to fucking get the heat off their own ass. Because our classmates and shit, you know, bumping into people later on, having a drink with them, saying, yeah, man, you know, so-and-so, remember that kid? Said, yeah, I remember. I said, man, you know, That fucking guy just got married, man. I'm like, what do you mean he got married? I don't care. He goes, no, Holmes. He got married to a guy, man. He got married to another man. It's like,
I'll be damned.
Said, yeah, the one, he's, because he remembered when we were growing up, you know, I was very small and shit, so people used to pick on me. And fucking, this particular kid used to kick me in the ass all the time, and we used to fight all the time. I'd walk past him. He called me a faggot, called me, you know, a piss-colored, yellow nigga faggot, right?
Nice.
So, you know, I'm light-skinned, you know, I'm small, and really, you know, defenseless to some of these harder kids at the time, right? And motherfucking, he used to make my life miserable. To turn around and find out that motherfucker was gay is a $3 goddamn bill. Same thing with that other kid. Found out that fucking saw him in the street holding hands with somebody. And I'm like, well, motherfucker. And then he's like, oh, wait a minute. That was a long time ago. He already knew what the fuck I was angry about. You understand? I said, you motherfucker, man. I said, your boyfriend made my motherfucking life hell. And the fella's like, what are you talking about? I don't know you. I said, no, you don't know me, but I grew up with this motherfucker. And I said, he made my fucking life hell. Because, see, one of the things was having to fight physically both those two motherfuckers for hitting me and spitting on me and shit like that. They left the door open for abuse from other people. You understand what I'm saying?
Minus the ethnic references, yeah, I do know what it's like because I got it.
You got it too.
And I watched and I watched it happen to my son.
Yeah, see, and that must hurt, you know, to have to fucking witness that shit to your own. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit and whine about it because I'm not. But it is to say, you know, when men like you and I are sympathetic to, you know, women and their issues in dealing with males in a fucked up misogynist society and in, you know, terms of homophobia. Because we've had to deal with that, you know. I mean, ask any goddamn male who, if you're sitting with a group of men and they say, yeah, well, you know, I mean, something really goddamn inappropriate, or perhaps they say something directly to a female that is just out of motherfucking pocket. And you correct that cat. how do most men motherfucking start treating you? You know, oh, you're only doing that to get more pussy, man. Or, you know, you're trying to impress these bitches, man. It's like, no, man, it's just motherfucking wrong. You know, I got a mother and a wife. What the fuck is your goddamn problem, man? Come on. That's wrong, man. It's just fucking wrong. Oh, man, fuck you. I do what I want to do. You're just a motherfucking punk son.
Well, you know what? But if you go to church on Sunday and they read to you about the natural uses of the woman.
Whatever. Fuck them.
Well, but you can't just dismiss it that easily, Angry.
Oh, I'm not dismissing it.
That's tens of millions of Americans. Half of whom or more are male.
Well, that's just a justification. We can find that same thing around the world that isn't connected to Christianity at all. Jews have done the same thing since the beginning of the fucking religion. Islam, which should be a liberating thing for women, if you go by what's written, right? If you go by what's argued, even though, you know, socially in the Arab world, it isn't practiced at all. Misogyny is the motherfucking rule of law there. You know, I mean, we look at an advanced goddamn country like Japan. To this fucking day, it's 2016. Women still fucking vote the way their husbands and boyfriends tell them to. To this day. You know, so when we think about somebody like Mateen, we have to take into account, you know, a fucking culture that, first off, you know, says that legitimate rape and shit is part of the doctrine of a political fucking party, and women still belong to that motherfucking party and don't do everything possible to take it down. It's allowed to propagate. So we shouldn't be surprised that a misogynist like, you know, Donald Trump, who I've never really heard him say anything against gay people per se, because if he can make money from them, he probably doesn't give a shit. You know, he probably doesn't
care. Look. Is that surprising? At one point in time, after all of his New York value speeches, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time, he went to New York to try to drum up money from wealthy gay people.
Because in New York City and in Philly and in Miami, he can find gay people who are just as conservative as everybody else and make a lot of money and don't want to pay a fucking cent in taxes and really don't want the riffraff coming into their motherfucking gated community either. So they'll vote for him. I mean, speaking of New York City, you know, and conservative politics, you got Rudy Giuliani, right? Now, conservatives have hassled him for being, you know, caught in drag. And you can actually go on YouTube and find a video of Giuliani in drag kissing Donald Trump on the lips.
Oh, yeah.
Don't believe me.
Right? No. I've seen it.
Right. He lived with two gay men for several years. Why? I don't know. Because he was in and out of marriages and shit. You know, he wasn't a faithful husband, despite his Catholic, you know, upbringing and his, you know, harping on that. He wasn't faithful to his wife at all. And after he was actually him and that Kirk motherfucker were kind of, you know, really male sluts about it. But what I'm trying to get to is he had a fellow working for him, because this is where I remember the case. Because David Mixner was working for the Democrats at that time, for the Clinton people at that time, to get as many gay votes for them as possible. And one of his real serious opponents was in New York City. And I can't remember this man's name, but he was gay. He was working at the time for the Giuliani office. I don't know exactly what he was doing. I guess he was mayor at the time. And, you know, Giuliani was against gay marriage and what have you. This motherfucker went up to one of the New England states where gay marriage was legal. One of the early ones where they had passed some legislation. Even though he was writing legislation and other fucking moves to prevent gay people from getting married in the state of New York, he went to another state and married his partner. When he was asked about it by the local New York papers, he said he didn't find a contradiction between his private life and what he did for a living. So if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know. Right, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, Angry, it has been, as usual, a scintillating conversation, and I do appreciate it.
All right, my man.
We always manage to find something that we drill down and find something we didn't know we knew, and known unknowns, garden gnomes, yard gnomes, but that's kind of the heart of the conversational model as it exists, as we kind of put it in practice here.
All right, you guys, reach into your pockets and please pull out some coins and go to hitonradio.com.
And before the emails start rolling in again, please tell people where they can go to catch your podcast.
Oh, angryindianradio.wordpress.com.
All righty. I appreciate it.
Oh, sorry. Aboriginal.
Yeah, see?
.wordpress.com.
Aboriginalradio.wordpress.com.
My apologies. Yes.
No worries. No worries.
Anyway, support the Bob Kincaid Show. Peace.
See you, Angry. Bye now. And yeah, that support would be welcome. Thus far, Paul is the only one to jump in on the fundraising bandwagon this evening. We have $186.50 to go. So hopefully that will be dealt with in fairly short order. Oh my goodness, it's the birthday boy. It's Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Happy birthday.
Hey, thank you, my man. Thank you. People have been crawling out from out of the woodwork wishing me a happy day. And beginning my 62nd year on the planet, very few regrets, the only one of which is after 62 round trips around the sun, I'm just only sorry I didn't get frequent flyer miles. You know what I'm saying?
You've been working on that one all day, haven't you?
Well, that's one of my famous ad libs from my radio days. That line is so old it's been condemned. But anyway, good call.
Oh, there's
there.
Punky. I was beginning to worry.
There he is. He's frustrated because you can't operate the heat register on the oven, so he can't bake me a birdseed birthday cake like you wanted to.
Damn it.
And he has trouble cracking the eggs, you know? I mean, he'll peck at them. But he can't just bang him up against the mixing bowl.
Well, he doesn't have that good egg cracking beak. He's got that little curved beak.
Right. He's okay with sunflower seeds, but beyond that, everything's a struggle.
Damn the luck.
Anyway, good call there by Angry Indian. I wanted to pass this along. I sent it to you by email, but you're probably overwhelmed or underwhelmed with emails over the nights. Given the fact that the NRA figures so prominently in this seemingly endless parade of lunacy that results in more blood-soaked victims almost on a weekly basis, you know, when it comes right down to it, I had seen it when it first aired back in January of 2015. Just about a month after the, less than a month after the Sandy Hook debacle, I think it was, or maybe a year and a month. But if you Google Frontline, like the PBS TV show Frontline, and then the words gunned down, you'll get a link that'll let you watch for about an hour an episode of Frontline, strangely enough, entitled Gunned Down. And it's worth the revisit to that for those who have seen it or maybe haven't seen it, to get an idea of what a powerful, insidious adversary we face in the National Rifle Association, and of course their bought and paid for stooges in the U.S. Congress and lower levels of government from state to state and even city to city, you know? And it's called Gunned Down. If you Google that along with the word Frontline, you'll get a couple of ads for flea remedies. But scroll down and you'll find the PBS Frontline website and can watch that. I encourage people to do that because our work is definitely cut out for us in the sense that this NRA is so entrenched in our system of government and has got an iron fist around the nuts, such as they are, of every GOP candidate.
Well, but let's be honest here. They've got that same fist around the self same testicles of no small number of Democrats as well.
Oh yeah,
that's what makes them effective.
Exactly, and the people, the representatives and the senators, quake in their boots at the very notion of any way upsetting the National Rifle Association. And this episode of Frontline spells out exactly how it got to be the way it is today, because 35, 40 years ago, the NRA wasn't the kind of organization that we have to deal with today. They were basically about teaching hunters and sportsmen and their families gun safety.
Yes.
And just common sense gun practices. And they got hijacked pretty much back in, I think it was 77, at their annual meeting in Cincinnati, when one wing of the NRA decided that they should get more involved in politics.
Well, that wasn't a voting accident.
No, no.
That was a conscious decision resulting from infiltration of the NRA by the RNC.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't think for a minute that the religion industry didn't play into it too, because there's an evangelical component to the NRA. I mean, if you do a Venn diagram of NRA members and evangelical Christianity, I would guess it's a pretty significant overlay.
Yeah, well, it's like a Venn diagram. You've got the GOP, you've got the religious fanatics. You've got what are those folks that don't put license plates on their car?
Sovereign citizens.
Yeah, you've got the sovereign citizens, and all of them combined into this horrible stew of madness to keep America, as Greg Palast called it, an armed
madhouse. Right.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to give a little TV viewing tip to the listeners, because it's well worth about an hour it takes to watch it, and it'll give you a rough idea of what we're up against. And then we look at the largest number of casualties in a shooting incident in this country down in Orlando, and then you have to wonder, well, will that be the tipping point? And then we had this little show in the Senate yesterday.
No, Scott, there is no tipping point.
Well, this is what I mean. You know, it's like an exercise.
I mean, if chopping 20 first graders into tiny little pieces with a semi-automatic assault rifle isn't a tipping point, then tipping points do not exist.
Especially when they show up in the form of Hispanic or Latin queers, okay?
That's been what I've been saying for, you know, a week now, or the better part of one, is that, you know, the problem with Orlando is that you've got a lot of people who are deeply conflicted about it because, well, dang, terrorism, but hey, at least they shot some people we'd like to shoot too.
Yeah, exactly. So, like you said, if the death of 26 and 7 year olds and six adult staff members at Sandy Hook didn't move these bastards, this isn't likely to either. If anything, it will encourage them to be bigger assholes.
Yeah, but can we? I mean, granted, they've got the guns and they'd just as soon shoot you as look at you if they could get away with it. But is it okay that can we make a blanket statement? You tell me that if you're a member of the NRA, there's something wrong with you.
No, even today's NRA, I wouldn't exactly say that, because I believe it was mentioned as a statistic in this program that I'm plugging here, that a goodly number of members of the NRA and gun owners generally
are supportive of things like closing the gun show loophole.
Exactly.
Are supportive of eliminating straw man purchases.
Yeah, exactly. Two things that anybody with a lick of sense would agree would be a step in the right direction. Now, will it stop all gun violence? No. Will it keep guns and assault weapons out of the hands of lunatics, terrorists, and criminals? No. But if you save one life, Jesus, God, if you save a dozen lives in the course of a week, that's what is that old saying? It's better to light one candle than curse darkness. I mean, come on, people. You know, it's just insanity.
Well, but okay, so all these good NRA members, Scott. Why do they stay NRA members if their organization runs directly contrary to their wishes?
Well, I'm not sure they have an alternative. There are a couple of other groups, gun rights groups, so-called.
Well, there's Gun Goobers of America, and they think the NRA is a bunch of liberal commies.
Exactly. So, I mean, how do they best organize, and who do they ally with?
But I want to work through a little bit more of this. Why do they need to organize? I mean, the origins of the NRA. The NRA was founded by some former Union officers out of New York, if I recall correctly. And it was formed in the late 1800s to foster better shooting skills because these former Union officers were of the opinion that the Confederate soldiers who had grown up shooting because they lived a more rural lifestyle were more effective.
Yeah.
So, in a way, you can argue that the NRA was little more than a paramilitary operation from jump.
Well, yeah, I guess you could.
What I'm trying to figure out here is, what does the NRA accomplish for its membership? Because, I mean, I'm familiar with that Frontline documentary. One of the facts of the NRA is that it does not represent its membership. It is an industry front group. It's a PR firm for the gun industry.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's the firearms equivalent of the National Beef Council or the National Dairymen's Association. Got milk? Got guns?
Yeah, well, they're the equivalent of what the GOP is. For 30-some years, the GOP has represented itself to its supporters that we're going to do this for you and we're going to do that for you. And now we've got the demented circus peanut, Donald Trump, pointing out the fact that none of those things have come to pass and they've been screwing you all along. Okay? So, to me, you ask why should these right-thinking NRA members organize under some other banner, it would simply be a matter of doing the right thing in the sense that here are people who believe in gun rights, but they also believe in human responsibility. And that, to me, would be the main reason.
But I come back to my query. What do they need to organize for?
Because nobody's after
their guns.
That's true, but to bring some sanity to the conversation, because we're obviously not getting it from the NRA and the groups that are even crazier than they are.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to be obtuse, Scott.
I'm just
trying to figure out that, you know, if you've got, you know, you got a 30-06 you use for deer season.
Yeah.
You got a 10-gauge you use for goose season. You got a 12-gauge you use for turkey season. You got a 22 that you use squirrel hunting. And, okay, maybe you've got a 410 that you use for home defense. I mean, let's just posit that. Why do you need a lobby in Congress when there's not a member, the most liberal member of Congress, arguably Bernie Sanders, has no interest at all in taking away anybody's guns? What do you need to organize for?
Well, that's a very good point, and I'll have to rethink my premise. Maybe it's not a matter of organizing a gun group. Maybe it's these straight-thinking gun owners who are responsible, who see the need for common sense gun laws in this country. Maybe they just need to no longer be associated with the NRA, because, frankly, NRA and then those other crazy right-wing gun groups are not the last thing they want to do is speak in a sane, rational manner, because they're shooting themselves in their own foot simply because it undermines, well, like you said earlier in the show today, the argument that they give is that no matter how good the law is, it doesn't keep the guns out of the hands of terrorists, criminals, and lunatics. You know?
The lunatics we could do something about. And this was something I wanted to circle back around to in talking to Angry earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you've got that box. Now, you're standing there at the counter. You got the big floppy shoes on. You got the big red rubber nose on. You got the fright wig on. You got the clown white on. You got the big puffy suit with the polka dots on. And you say, I want me a Sig Sauer semi-automatic assault rifle, and I need 10 50-round magazines. Yes, sir. Here they are. Let me get them. Okay. Yeah. And he opens the boxes. He checks. Okay. Yep. Each one's got a magazine in it. Do you want a carry case for that? No. I don't think I'm going to need a carry case for that. I'm not going to have it that long. That's great. Your total is $2,372.17. Let's go over the paperwork. Nice clown suit you got. Are you nuts? Well, hell no. Okay.
Let me
I got your money. That. Here's your form. So what we're describing here is a commercial transaction, Scott, that is essentially, except for the self-reporting of nuts, and I'm uncomfortable with that part, and I'm uncomfortable with lunatic, and I don't want to be hurtful to anybody who endures any sort of mental illness, and I apologize. But except for the self-reporting I'm perfectly fine, thanks. It's the same as going to the grocery store and buying a gallon of milk.
Exactly, because someone who has a tenuous relationship with reality and common sense is not going to check the box that answers yes to the query, are you out of your fucking mind?
Well, but there's that. And the thing is, you know, we talk about a cooling off period. What argument is there? And I'm, by argument, I mean rational argument, not the paranoid ravings of Wayne LaPeter or Ted Pantsful Nugent or Chris loses arguments with himself, Cox,
or Alex Jones,
or. But what rational argument is there that if you go rushing into a gun store to buy a gun, you should be able to walk out the door with it immediately? Because see, background checks, as we currently practice them, are just computer searches.
Yeah.
And we do not coordinate data. I mean, is it too much to ask a civil society, Scott, that we have enough time to actually find out if the person buying the extremely deadly military-style weapon, the Rambo-style weapon, as Elizabeth Warren calls it, is actually mentally okay to have it?
Well, those individuals that you mentioned will not accept any rational argument that will inhibit them in any way from living in a manner that's consistent with how they interpret the Second Amendment. But maybe there's a workaround that could be helpful in some places. All right, if they're using as their justification the Second Amendment that talks about a well-regulated militia.
Well, first of all, under the Heller decision, the entire well-regulated militia clause does not exist. It's out the window. It's meaningless.
But what I'm getting at is, if they want to even try to use that argument, well, let's look at what well-regulated looks like. And let's suppose there are municipalities and states who decide that well-regulated includes your name, your address, your email, and a list of what weapons you have. Because after all, if we need to know what you're carrying and what your mindset is, if you're going to be part of the militia that is legally to be well-regulated. I mean, isn't that like a partial workaround where it would work?
No, because that would be compulsion of involuntary servitude. And that would violate the 13th Amendment, unless you want to reinstate a draft.
But wait a minute. They say that they want, that they're justified by the constitutional principle of guns are okay as part of a well-regulated militia. They want to be part of that. Why cannot the well-regulation part include some fucking regulations?
Well, but the Heller decision says it can. I mean, you can regulate who can and cannot concealed carry a gun. Yeah. Now, the second front on that is to say everybody is to do what West Virginia did last year and say, or last winter, and say everybody can carry a concealed gun who's over 21 and isn't a felon and isn't mentally ill. But we're not going to look too hard at that whole mentally ill thing. And, you know, 18-year-olds can carry a concealed weapon permit as long as they pass the, and this is ironic, hunter's safety class.
You know, it's the way you describe it, it's kind of surprising that they've got any provisions at all for that kind of thing. Because when it comes down to it, the NRA and these other groups and a lot of the Bible thumpers and other gun nuts don't think that anything or anyone should stand in their way. Hell, if they want a suitcase-sized thermonuclear device or a shoulder-mounted anti-aircraft weapon, by God, by Jingo, praise God and all that's good and red, white, and blue, they ought to have it. And then we wonder why this shit keeps happening, or at least some people do. Some people have thrown their hands up and says, well, hell, just shoot me now, because why wait for the wheel to spin and land on my number? I may as well get it over with now.
Terrifying thought, isn't it?
It certainly is. But anyway.
Oh, speaking of, let me ask you this before we wrap up and you go off to your wild celebration of your birthday.
Yeah, so Punky and his little Easy Bake Oven and a pound and a half of bird seed and eggs that aren't quite cracked.
Right, yeah. I got a feeling you're going to be doing most of the work.
Yeah, I think I ought to fortify myself with a good, strong vodka martini before we engage in this enterprise in the kitchen, this happy homemaker shtick.
but I did want to ask you, you know, I brought it up talking to Angry. Anything in the news there about the SEAL being charged with murder of the guy in Santa Monica?
No, I heard you mention that. Now, this is not the guy from Indiana, right?
No, this is a different story. This is cold-blooded murder.
No, I'll tell me those details again, and I'll see what I
can. Well, there aren't many details. The two guys, I guess, they didn't know each other. They met on the Santa Monica Pier.
Oh, wait a minute. There was something on the local news last night about that, and I kind of was half watching, so I wasn't really giving it my strict attention. Yeah, there was something on the local NBC 11 o'clock news last night. But again, the details, I'll see what I can find and send it along, but I it didn't register with me. I guess I've gone into overload mode simply because, you know, you can't get your head around stuff. It's happening so fast. First but poor girl singer gets gunned down. And then less than 48 hours later, or thereabouts, you've got the largest, you know, mass casualty gun incident in America. You just maybe that's the point. Maybe they don't want us to get our heads around it. Maybe they want us to be scared shitless and think that there's no solution.
Well, it's kind of hard to think that there is, given the circumstances. Scott, it's always good to hear from you. And again, I sincerely wish you a very happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to see if we can get the Bernie stream up here. But we got some other folks that want to jump into the conversation.
Okay,
well.
Yeah, I forgot. He's giving an announcement in a wee bit.
Yeah.
Okay,
all right,
Bob.
Take it easy, Scott.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And thanks going out, by the way, to Charlie in Tennessee. Charlie has jumped in alongside Paul, and we've now only got $166.50 to go on fundraising for this evening. And while I'm trying to bring up, see if I can bring up Bernie, let's bring up Thomas alongside. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. If you can hear me, okay.
And I can.
I have the Bernie stream, and I can play it right now.
Well, but it might not come. Let me see if I can get it here.
Bob?
Okay, I've got him.
That was me.
No, this is me.
To create a nation and world of social and economic justice. That's what the trade
Thomas,
union
I'll come
movement
back to you
is
in a
about.
Minute.
That's what the civil rights movement is about. That's
this
what
is live.
The women's movement is about. That's what the gay rights movement is about. That's what the environmental movement is about. And that's what this campaign has been about over the past year. That's what the political revolution is about. And that's why the political revolution must continue into the future. Real change never takes place from the top on down or in the living rooms of wealthy campaign contributors. It always occurs from the bottom on up when tens of millions of people say loudly and clearly, enough is enough, and they become engaged in the fight for justice. That's what the political revolution we helped start is all about. That's why the political revolution...
Oh, goody, buffering. I love buffering. This is almost as good as a mystery where you're about to find out who done it. And, you know.
Revolution must continue. When we began this campaign a little over a year ago, we had no political organization, no money, and very little name recognition. The media determined that we were a fringe campaign. Nobody thought we were going anywhere. Well, a lot has changed over a year. During this campaign, we won more than 12 million votes. We won 22 state primaries and caucuses. We came very close, within 2 points or less, in 5 more states. In other words, our vision for the future of this country is not some kind of fringe idea. It is not a radical idea. It is mainstream. It is what millions of Americans believe in and want to see happen. And something else extraordinarily important happened in this campaign that makes me very optimistic about the future of our country, something that, frankly, I had not anticipated. And that is that in virtually every state that we contested, we won the overwhelming majority of the votes of people 45 years of age or younger, sometimes, may I say, by huge numbers. These are the people who are determined to shape the future of our country. These are the people who are the future of our country. Together in this campaign, 1.5 million people came out to our rallies and town meetings in almost every state in the country. Together, hundreds of thousands of volunteers made 75 million phone calls. 75 million phone calls urging their fellow citizens into action. Together, our canvassers knocked on more than 5 million doors. Together, we hosted 74,000 meetings in every state and territory in this country. Together, 2.5 million people made over 8 million individual campaign contributions. More contributions at this point than any campaign in American history. Amazingly, the bulk of those contributions came from low-income and working people whose donations averaged $27 apiece. In an unprecedented way, we showed the world that we could run a strong national campaign without being dependent on the big money interests whose greed has done so much to damage our country. And let me give a special thanks to the financial support we received from students struggling to repay their college loans, from seniors and disabled vets on Social Security, from workers earning starvation wages, and even from people who were unemployed. In every single state that we contested, we took on virtually the entire political establishment, U.S. senators, members of Congress, governors, mayors, state legislators, and local party leaders. To those relatively few elected officials who had the courage to stand with us, I say thank you. Thank you, and we must continue working together into the future. This campaign has never been about any single candidate. It has always been about transforming America. It is about ending a campaign finance system which is corrupt and allows billionaires to buy elections. It is about ending the grotesque level of wealth and income inequality that we are experiencing, where almost all new wealth and income goes to the people on top, where the 20 wealthiest people own more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans, half our population. It is about creating an economy that works for all of us, not just the 1%. It is about ending the disgrace of Native Americans who live on the Pine Ridge, South Dakota reservation, having a life expectancy lower than many third world countries. It is about ending the incredible despair that exists in many parts of this country, where, as a result of unemployment and low wages, suicide, drugs, and alcohol, millions of Americans are now dying in a historic way, in an ahistoric way, at a younger age than their parents. Think about it. People today, by the millions, dying at a lower age than their parents. It is about ending the disgrace of having the highest level of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth, and having public schools in inner cities that are totally failing our children, where kids now stand a greater chance of ending up in jail than ending up with a college degree. It is about ending the disgrace that millions of undocumented people in this country continue to live in fear and are exploited every day on their jobs because they have no legal rights. It is about ending the disgrace of tens of thousands of Americans dying every single year from preventable deaths because they either lack health insurance, have high deductibles, or cannot afford the outrageously high cost of the prescription drugs they need. Tens of thousands of Americans dying needlessly. It is about ending the disgrace of hundreds of thousands of bright young people unable to go to college because their families are poor or working class, while millions more struggle with suffocating levels of student debt. It is about ending the pain of a young single mother in Nevada, in tears, telling me that she doesn't know how she and her daughter can make it on the $10.45 an hour she earns. And the reality that today millions of our fellow Americans are working at wages that are much, much too low. It is about ending the disgrace of a mother in Flint, Michigan, telling me what has happened to the intellectual development of her child as a result of excessive lead in the water in that city, of many thousands of homes in California and other communities where people are unable to drink the polluted water that comes out of their faucets. In America, in the year 2016, in a nation whose infrastructure is crumbling before our eyes. It is about ending the disgrace that too many veterans still sleep out on the streets, that homelessness is increasing, and that tens of millions of Americans, because of a lack of affordable housing, are now paying 40, 50% or more of their limited incomes to put a roof over their heads. It is about ending the disgrace that in a given year, corporations making billions of dollars in profit avoid paying a nickel in federal taxes because they stash their money in the Cayman Islands and in other tax havens. This campaign is also about defeating Donald Trump, the Republican candidate for president. After centuries of racism, sexism, and discrimination of all forms in our country, we do not need a major party candidate who makes bigotry the cornerstone of his campaign. We cannot have a president who insults Mexicans and Latinos, Muslims, women, and African Americans. We cannot have a president who, in the midst of so much income and wealth inequality, wants to give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the very, very rich. We cannot have a president who, despite all of the scientific evidence, believes that climate change is a hoax. The major political task that together we face in the next 5 months is to make certain that Donald Trump is defeated and defeated badly. And I personally intend to begin my role in that process in a very short period of time. But defeating Donald Trump cannot be our only goal. We must continue our grassroots effort to create the America that we know we can become. And we must take that energy into the Democratic National Convention on July 25th in Philadelphia, where we will have more than 1,900 delegates. I recently had the opportunity to meet with Secretary Clinton and discuss some of the very important issues facing our country and the Democratic Party. It is no secret that Secretary Clinton and I have strong disagreements on some very, very important issues. It is also true that our views are quite close on others. I look forward in the coming weeks to continued discussion between the two campaigns to make certain that your voices are heard and that the Democratic Party passes the most progressive platform in its history and that Democrats actually fight for that agenda. I also look forward to working with Secretary Clinton to transform the Democratic Party so that it becomes a party of working people and young people and not just wealthy campaign contributors. A party that has the guts to take on Wall Street, the pharmaceutical industry, the fossil fuel industry, and the other powerful special interests that dominate so much of our political and economic life. As I have said throughout this campaign, the Democratic Party must support raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour and create millions of jobs rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. We must ensure that women will no longer make 79 cents on the dollar compared to men and that we fight for pay equity. We must also fight to make certain that women throughout this country have the right to control their own bodies. We must protect the right of our gay brothers and sisters to marriage equality in every state in America. As the recent tragedy in Orlando has made crystal clear, we must ban the sale and distribution of assault weapons, end the gun show loophole, and expand instant background checks. We must defeat the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, and make certain that bad trade deals do not get a vote in a lame duck session of Congress. The TPP must not come to the floor. We must resist all efforts to cut Social Security and, in fact, expand benefits for our senior citizens and disabled veterans. We must understand that the greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior on Wall Street has to end, that we need to pass a modern-day Glass-Steagall legislation, and that we need to break up the biggest financial institutions in this country, who not only remain too big to fail, but who prevent the kind of vigorous competition that a healthy financial system requires. We must aggressively combat climate change and transform our energy system, move to energy efficiency and sustainable energy, and impose a tax on carbon. It means that further, we must protect our water supply by banning fracking. We must compete effectively in a global economy by making public colleges and universities tuition-free and substantially reduce student debt. We must join the rest of the industrialized world and guarantee health care to all of our people as a right, not a privilege. We must end the disgrace of having more people in jail than any other country on earth and move toward real criminal justice reform at the federal, state, and local levels. We must pass comprehensive immigration reform and provide a path toward citizenship for 11 million undocumented people. We must take a hard look at the waste, cost overruns, and inefficiencies in every branch of government, including the Department of Defense. And we must make certain that our brave young men and women in the military are not thrown into perpetual warfare in the Middle East or other wars that we should not be fighting. But the political revolution means much more than fighting for our ideals at the Democratic National Convention and defeating Donald Trump. It means that at every level, we continue the fight to make our society a nation of economic, social, racial, and environmental justice. It means that we can no longer ignore the fact that, sadly, the current Democratic Party leadership has turned its back on dozens of states and has allowed right-wing politicians to win elections in some states with virtually no opposition, including some of the poorest states in our country. The Democratic Party needs a 50-state strategy. We may not win in every state tomorrow, but we will never win unless we recruit good candidates and develop organizations that compete effectively in the future. We must provide resources to those states which have so long been ignored. Most importantly, the Democratic Party needs leadership which is prepared to open its doors and welcome into its ranks working people and young people. That is the energy we need to transform the Democratic Party, take on the special interests, and transform our country. Here is a cold, hard fact that must be addressed. Since 2009, some 900 legislative seats have been lost to Republicans in state after state throughout this country. In fact, the Republican Party now controls 31 state legislatures and controls both the governor's mansions and state houses in 23 states. That is unacceptable. We need to start engaging at the local and state level in an unprecedented way. Hundreds of thousands of volunteers helped us make political history during this last year. These are people deeply concerned about the future of our country and about their own communities. Now we need many of them to start running for school boards, city councils, county commissions, state legislatures, and governorships. State and local governments make enormously important decisions, and we cannot allow right-wing Republicans to increasingly control them. I hope very much that many of you watching tonight are prepared to engage at that level. Please go to my website at berniesanders.com/win to learn more about how you can effectively run for office or get involved in politics at the local or state level. I have no doubt that with the energy and enthusiasm our campaign has shown, that we can win significant numbers of local and state elections if people are prepared to become involved. I also hope that people will give serious thought to running for statewide offices and the United States Congress. We need new blood in the political process, and you are that new blood. And when we talk about transforming America, it is not just about elections. Many of my Republican colleagues believe that government is the enemy, that we need to eviscerate and privatize virtually all aspects of government, whether it is Social Security, Medicare, the Veterans Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Postal Service, or public education. I strongly disagree. In a democratic, civilized society, government must play an enormously important role in protecting all of us and our planet. But in order for government to work efficiently and effectively, we need to attract great and dedicated people from all walks of life. We need people who are dedicated to public service and can provide the services we need in a high quality and efficient way. When we talk about a Medicare for All health care program and the need to make sure that all of our people have quality health care, it means that we need tens of thousands of new doctors and nurses and dentists and psychologists and other medical personnel who are prepared to practice in areas where people today lack access to that care. It means that we need hundreds of thousands of people to become child care workers and teachers so that our young people will get the best education available in the world. It means that as we combat climate change and transform our energy system away from fossil fuels, we need scientists and engineers and entrepreneurs who will help us make energy efficiency, solar energy, wind energy, geothermal, and other developing technologies as efficient and cost-effective as possible. It means that as we rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, we need millions of skilled and well-trained construction workers of all kinds. It means that when we talk about growing our economy and creating jobs, we need great business people who can produce and distribute the products and services that we need in a way that respects their employees and the environment. In other words, we need a new generation of people actively involved in public service who are prepared to provide the quality of life the American people deserve. Let me conclude by once again thanking everyone who has helped in this campaign in one way or another. We have begun the long and arduous process of transforming America, a fight that will continue tomorrow, next week, next year, and into the future. My hope is that when future historians look back and describe how our country moved forward into reversing the drift toward oligarchy, and how we move forward in creating a government which represents all of the people and not just a few, that they will note that to a significant degree, that effort began with the political revolution of 2016. Thank you all very much. Good night.
Well, Thomas, Jules, what'd you think of that?
Well, Bobby didn't God bless America. He's a heathen.
And he didn't thoughts and prayer us.
I know. Well, thank God for that. That's always nice. I thought it was pretty good. It was a standard, almost stump speech, but it laid out everything that we're working toward, and it reminded, I hope, Bernie supporters, one and all, that it isn't about Bernie, and it doesn't end here.
No, but this part of it is over.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah,
I think that's abundantly clear. The fact that he did not in any way, not even marginally or tangentially or backhandedly, criticize anything about Hillary Clinton.
No, he didn't.
It's over.
Yeah. No, and for those who think there's going to be something at the convention, yeah, no. It's going to be a part. It's going to be the platform, and it's going to be giving him a speaking role, maybe prime time, I hope. And that's it. And hopefully we'll be able to do exactly what he says and continue this. Because I, for one, I don't know about you, Bob, but I never thought that for a single second that this was just about Bernie Sanders getting to the White House.
Well, no, I mean he laid out a roadmap for where this goes. And you know what? If people do not get off their asses and run for county commission and run for city council and do those sorts of things, that ain't on Bernie. That's on them. That is on us. So, you know, basically he says the ball's in our court. If we sit around in the weeds and wish for wish for a world that runs on unicorn farts, you know, then when it doesn't work out that way, that ain't on Bernie.
Well, that's exactly it. And I was during it. My friend Jeff from Around the Nation was talking to me, and he said, you know, now we need to do the work and get the Congress and let a progressive Congress pass Medicare for all and Hillary veto it. The uprising.
Well, what would you do if at the convention he was the one who gave the primetime speech putting Hillary's name in nomination?
Good question.
Good question.
I'd be okay with it. Because I want to fight on. I want to defeat fascism, and the only way if it means defeating it with a corporatist, I'm okay with it. Because at least it's not a fascist. It's close, but it's not there yet.
Okay, let me give you a little piece of breaking news, and I'm not Jules. I'm not trying to run over the top of you either.
No, that's fine.
A little something broke during Bernie's speech. By the way, if you were listening to this speech on the horn, you got to hear all of it. If you were listening to it on MSNBC. Joy Reid broke in.
Oh, boy.
She did.
Yeah, Jack told me that. Interesting piece of breaking news. There is a process, this hit during the speech, there's a process in the State Department whereby, via back channels, diplomats and workers inside the State Department can voice dissent with current policy. An unheard of 50 State Department diplomats have signed, and the New York Times has gotten its hand on it, an internal memo calling on the Obama administration to begin bombing the Assad regime in Syria.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
In other words, the exact thing that Hillary, who, of course, was in the State Department, who was the Secretary of State, wanted with all her heart.
That's what President Clinton will do.
Well, but we've still got President Obama. You think maybe there's enough? You think there's anything left of the progressive movement for people to say to Hillary, "Listen, sis, you get your war on in Syria. You don't get to be president. You beat the Syrian war drum. We stay home." Because that is another Middle Eastern war really is a deal breaker for me. You know, I said a long time ago, and this is consistent with my own previous statements. I said a long time ago that if the first damn bomb fell in Iran during the Obama administration, I was damned well done. Well, that applies to Hillary, too.
Minus it, my red line is the TPP signage. Any version of it. Any version.
Well, that may happen. You know, Obama supports that. She says she doesn't. The reason she can say she doesn't is she's counting on it to pass before she becomes president.
Yeah, but she doesn't. But no, she parsed her words, Bob. She said she doesn't support this version of it. So she can go in as president and change it and tweak it just enough for her to sign it. And I will not support her.
Well, but that's after she's president. I'm talking about what happens between now and the election. We get our war on in Syria. She starts talking about how badly she wants her some war in Syria. That's going to, Trump or no Trump, that's going to, and I might upset some people saying this. That's going to be a serious, serious, serious issue for me.
I might consider.
And I think if we don't want another goddamn Middle Eastern war, we damned well better make it plain to her. But unfortunately, we've run up against 9 o'clock.
True. So. Yes, we have, and my show starts, Malloy starts, and we're at it. But, you know, it was great hearing Bernie with you, Bob.
Well,
yes, it was.
It's always fun. Jules, thank you for joining in. I'm sorry you didn't get any time.
That's okay. We'll make it up tomorrow.
Absolutely, because tomorrow's Friday on the front porch.
Yay. Yes, it is.
All right, you guys, have a good night.
You too.
And you guys have a good night, too. Thanks to Paul, and thanks to Charlie for jumping in on fundraising this evening. That means that tomorrow evening's Friday on the Front Porch fundraising goal will be $366.50. So we'll cross our fingers for that. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation, this little community. Thank you to all of our supporters each and every evening. And thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.